Good afternoon and welcome to the KMXT Midday Report. The Midday Report is presented on KMXT, public radio for Kodiak, Alaska, broadcasting on 100.1 FM from Signal Hill, where it's 45 degrees. We're looking at scattered showers, cloudy skies, and high near 46 today. West wind to 5 miles per hour, should become calm this afternoon. And for tonight, scattered showers mainly before 10. Cloudy skies tonight, low around 38, and those calm winds will persist. Pretty nice gardening weather for tomorrow, too, just mostly cloudy skies, low around 39. And on Thursday, they're talking about a 30% chance of rain, partly sunny skies, high near 46. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough is thinking about eliminating Service District 2, and it's looking for some feedback from the public. The raw fish tax that has meant tens of millions of dollars for coastal communities and the state has survived a legal challenge. And the Alaska House passed their operating budget yesterday. It doesn't include funding for permanent fund dividends. And Pfizer says children between 12 and 15 years old are safe to take their COVID-19 vaccine. That and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A barrage of rocket fire further escalates a conflict that's already claimed lives and caused injuries in Israel and among Palestinians. Hamas militants fired rockets from Gaza City toward Tel Aviv and neighboring cities today. Hamas said it was retaliating after Israel destroyed a civilian building complex. These latest clashes have claimed a reported 28 lives in Gaza, which Palestinian officials say include both militants and civilians. 3 deaths are reported in Israel, the ongoing conflict prompting Israel to ground flights at its international airport. Reuters News Service cites local Israeli media in reporting rocket fire damage, including to a pipeline belonging to a state-owned energy company. TV images show the site in flames, but officials are reported saying operations have not been disrupted. Some gas stations in the southeastern U.S. are running out of gasoline because of a pipeline outage and because of panic buying. Colonial Pipeline was shut off after a cyber attack late last week and won't be returning to full operation for several more days. Here's NPR's Camila Domonoske.
The pipeline is a crucial conduit for much of the East Coast. The Southeast, in particular, relies on it. So this outage is disrupting supplies of gasoline in some areas. And the problem is being made much worse by panic buying, with many people rushing to fill up, even if they don't need to, out of fear. Patrick DeHaan is the head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy. He says the country will not see a major spike in gas prices.
What we will get is 2 to 3 weeks of stations that are running out of fuel because motorists are beginning to hoard it.
Governors in southern states are urging people not to panic, emphasizing the pipeline will be back up and running soon, so no need to fill up extra containers with gas. Camila Domonoske, NPR News.
The accused gunman behind the mass shootings at Atlanta area massage businesses in March has been indicted on murder charges related to the 4 lives he claimed at 2 of the targeted sites. A separate grand jury in Cherokee County will decide charges for the 4 deaths at the first site of the shooting rampage. The district attorney in Fulton County, Fannie Willis, says she will seek hate crimes charges and the death penalty against Robert Aaron Long. Most of the shooting victims were women of Asian descent. Sally Busby's become the first woman to lead the Washington Post newsroom in the paper's 144-year history. She's been named executive editor, succeeding Marty Baron, who retired in February. Busby previously served as executive editor and senior vice president of the Associated Press. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes down 472 points, ending the day at 34,270. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Kodiak Island Borough is proposing to eliminate Service District 2 and is looking for public feedback this month. Service District 2, which includes residential and park areas along Menashka Bay Road, was formed in 1991 to allow those residents the power to organize water and sewer services. However, since then, the district began using the city's water and sewer services and hasn't been able to fill seats on that service area board. Assemblyperson Dwayne Dvorak introduced the idea of eliminating the district at last month's meeting.
I guess my point was that we have a service area board, says we shall impanel people. We haven't been doing it. There really is nothing happening as far as investigating the potential for water and sewer in this area at the present time.
The alternative is to leave the district on the books in a sort of purgatory just in case, as Assembly Member Scott Arndt argued.
It's not hurting anything continuing to let Service District Number 2 exist on the books. Not hurting a thing. Doesn't generate any money, it doesn't spend any money. But where it comes in handy is potentially for grant money.
Federal and state grants for infrastructure do come up from time to time, so Arndt thinks eliminating the district would be an unnecessary obstacle.
So I don't feel it hurts to let it sit dormant on the books in hopes that something comes up, because it doesn't take very long to, I'll say, disconnect it, eliminate it. But it will take a year to go back through the process to create it.
At the April 15th meeting, the Assembly decided to continue exploring abolishing Service District 2 with a tie vote, which Mayor Bill Roberts broke. In the end, though, it's not up to the Assembly. Eliminating a service area is up to the residents of that area, as Dvorak recognized.
This needs to go to a ballot measure. It feels right to me that we get input from the community and let the community control their own destiny in this regard. And let them sort of tell us if they're still interested in pursuing this or not. And I don't think we're going to have that dialogue or get that kind of feedback if we don't forward this and kind of force the issue.
Just before putting the issue on the ballot this fall, the Assembly would like to hear from residents of Service District 2 at this week's work session, Thursday, May 13th, and next week's regular meeting on Thursday, May 20th. A raw fish tax that's pumped tens of millions of dollars into coastal communities in the past decade has survived a legal challenge before Alaska's highest court. The state can tax seafood caught in federal waters, then loaded on a bulk carrier at the dock for foreign export without violating provisions of the U.S. Constitution. That's according to the Alaska Supreme Court, which released its 31-page ruling on Friday. Fisherman's Finest, a large Washington state seafood company that operates factory trawlers and exports most of its product overseas, had challenged the state's tax in court. It argued that there are protections against state taxation on shipping in coastal state waters, and a lower court agreed. But the justices, writing in a unanimous opinion, found that the fees assessed on Fisherman's Finest products are not, quote, opportunistic taxation, unquote, of vessels that pass through Alaska waters without benefiting from local services. At stake was more than $47 million in revenue collected by the state since 2017. Half goes to coastal communities where the fish were landed. In the Aleutians case, the case was watched with great interest as taxes on the lucrative pollock fishery are a major economic driver. Unalaska's Vice Mayor Dennis Robinson says the raw fish tax is a major source of the city's municipal revenue, and local officials had been anxious about the impact of a decision against them.
I'm pretty relieved of that, because that is roughly 17% of our budget, and it would be devastating to this community.
The fisheries resource landing tax has existed since the 1990s and is designed to capture revenue for raw seafood that's landed on Alaska port docks before it's transshipped on cargo vessels and sold overseas. The Alaska House passed the operating budget yesterday. The budget includes most of what Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed for state agencies, but it doesn't include funding for permanent fund dividends. Members of the mostly Democratic House Majority Caucus say they expect to fund PFDs in a separate bill. Nome Democratic Representative Neil Foster says he's comfortable working out any remaining budget issues with the senators.
This is largely a flat budget compared to last year. It seeks to protect and enhance some important public services like transportation, like education. And at the same time, we've taken advantage of the American Rescue Plan funds that are coming to the state that'll help Alaskans to deal with this global pandemic.
The budget vote came the same day that news from the federal government raised a new potential budget problem. It appears that Alaska will receive roughly $200 million less in COVID relief than House members planned. That's because it appears Alaska will be among the states that will have half of their American Rescue Plan Act money withheld for a year. A draft of long-awaited federal guidance on how states can spend the money was released yesterday. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe voted no on the budget. He says it's unsound and that the legislature should have followed more of the administration's recommendations. Nikiski Republican Representative Ben Carpenter voted no as well.
I think we missed an opportunity to address our savings. We missed an opportunity to use the federal dollars to help us with making those structural changes. We missed the opportunity to help reduce our budget.
But Anchorage Democratic Representative Jaron Tarr said the minority offered few amendments that would have significantly reduced spending. The House amended the budget bill, House Bill 69, to say that the state's Medicaid program wouldn't pay for abortions. The state Supreme Court had ruled similar laws unconstitutional in the past because they violate the Alaska Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. The House spent most of the day debating more than 30 other budget amendments. The largest change that passed was adding $3.5 million to fund public assistance workers. Dunleavy's administration anticipates eliminating the positions due to a shift to online applications for public benefits, but that shift may not happen in time to save the money in the next year. Other amendments that passed say that it's the legislature's intent that the state government shouldn't keep any data that can be used for facial recognition software or provide driver's license information to foreign-owned corporations or foreign governments. But this intent language isn't binding on the government. The House also voted to pass the Alaska Mental Health Trust budget, which is in a separate bill. The votes are just one step before the budget is finalized. It now goes to the Senate, where the Finance Committee there is working on a somewhat different version of a budget bill. The two chambers usually work out their differences in a conference committee. The legislative session is scheduled to end May 19th. Alaska children between 12 and 15 years old may be able to get a Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine as soon as Wednesday. State health officials made the announcement following Monday's decision by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to authorize the use of the Pfizer vaccine for children 12 and up. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says that's great news for Alaska.
This is a huge opportunity to be able to protect our kids from this virus. We do see kids get really sick, and this is a big step to getting our communities healthy and well and putting this pandemic behind us.
However, the FDA authorization is just step one. The state is still waiting on the okay from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Zink expects the CDC's approval to come out Wednesday, and then Pfizer shots for 12 to 15-year-olds can begin immediately at local clinics and doctor's offices. As the mom of a 13-year-old, Zink expects she'll be booking her daughter an appointment right away.
So if you're a parent and as excited as I am at scheduling your kid's vaccine, you know, look for late Wednesday afternoon and on for an appointment to go ahead and schedule your kid's vaccine.
There are about 40,000 children in Alaska ages 12 to 15. Zink says the state has been preparing for vaccine eligibility to expand to the younger teens and has enough Pfizer doses to meet demand. The Pfizer vaccine is a two-shot series with 3 weeks between the doses. Zink says the state has no plans to require the COVID-19 vaccine for teens. Anchorage residents are choosing the city's next mayor on Tuesday. That's today. And turnout for the hotly contested runoff election appears very high. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George has this report.
As of Friday, the Municipal Election Center had already received more than 60,000 ballots. That's 4,000 more than had been received by General Election Day last month. About 75,000 people voted in the general election. The runoff has been a contentious race so far, as candidates Dave Bronson and Forrest Dunbar try to amass support in a deeply divided city. Bronson calls Dunbar a, quote, radical leftist, and is critical of the pandemic health measures Dunbar supported as an assembly member. Dunbar says Bronson is connected to the, quote, fringe elements of the political spectrum, and has called Bronson out for spreading misinformation about the coronavirus. The political division has been playing out in the community as well. Assembly meetings have become increasingly tense as residents lob personal attacks against members, including Dunbar. Governor Mike Dunleavy and Senator Dan Sullivan offered their endorsements for Bronson last week. A Sunday sermon at Anchorage Baptist Temple, where Bronson is a member, railed against Dunbar. And after the president of Public Employees Union Local 71 publicly endorsed Bronson on a campaign mailer, the union sent a scathing open letter to the Bronson campaign, clarifying that it does not endorse him. The letter referenced Bronson's plans to cut from every department of government except police, and said that the union president's actions were unauthorized and invalid. Alaska survey research polling from April shows the race to be extremely tight, with voters nearly split and only a small percentage undecided. Both candidates are scrambling to push as many residents as they can to the polls. Ballots must be postmarked or returned to a ballot drop box by 8 p.m. on Tuesday. If you're in line at a vote center or drop box by 8 p.m., you are still allowed to vote. Results will start to come in around 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday, though they won't be finalized until May 25th. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration has granted the governor's former chief of staff a waiver from state ethics laws in his new job at oil company ConocoPhillips, saying there's no conflict of interest because Conoco's new multi-billion dollar project will benefit the state. Ben Stevens left his job at Dunleavy's top deputy late February and immediately started to work as a Conoco executive. Conoco is Alaska's largest oil producer with dozens of state leases and plans to develop the massive new Willow project on federal land in the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska. State ethics laws say that for 2 years after leaving their jobs, public employees can't work for private companies on issues they were personally and substantially involved in. But Stevens says he was not personally or substantially involved in any issues as chief of staff because his job was simply to share information with the governor and facilitate his decisions. Nevertheless, 2 weeks into his new job, he asked the attorney general to waive him from those legal requirements for his work on the Willow Project, a step that's allowed under state ethics laws if the state decides it's not harmful to the public interest. In his request letter, Stevens said he was asking out of an abundance of caution and given what he calls the degree of public misunderstanding of what's barred by state ethics laws. Dunleavy and Attorney General Treg Taylor signed off on the waiver a few weeks later. The waiver was obtained through public records laws and publicized by the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, which has already asked that the Attorney General examine whether Stevens' departure violates state ethics laws. Stevens, in a phone interview today, that is yesterday, said he's aware that the state has initiated an investigation. The Public Interest Research Group also says the waiver's existence calls into question the Attorney General's integrity. That's because Taylor, in confirmation hearings, never disclosed that Stevens had asked for the waiver or that one was about to be granted. A spokesperson for Taylor says that because state ethics laws require confidentiality for requests for legal opinions like Stevens, until a decision is made, they did not reveal. Lawmakers are scheduled to take confirmation votes on the governor's most recent appointees, including Taylor, today. An Anchorage man is being held this morning at Fairbanks Correctional Center after he was denied entry into Canada and then was arrested on both sides of the U.S.-Canada border over the weekend. Alaska State Troopers say 61-year-old Terry Sharkey was first arrested by Royal Canadian Mounted Police after he was denied entry into Canada due to restrictions imposed as a COVID-19 precaution. A trooper spokesperson didn't have information about the incident this morning, nor whether Sharkey was charged by Canadian authorities. RCMP officials at the Yukon headquarters did not return a phone call yesterday morning. The trooper report says RCMP officers transported Sharkey from the Canadian Customs port of entry at Beaver Creek to the U.S. Customs facility about 20 miles away at Port Alcan in Alaska, about 300 miles south of Fairbanks. But Sharkey refused to identify himself to the customs officers and was detained. The report says the officers offered to release him because they had no facilities to hold him, but the report says he again refused to leave. Troopers responded to a call from Customs around 9:30 a.m., who called to report a hostile subject and arrested Sharkey for second-degree trespassing. He was taken to the Toke and arrested for second-degree trespassing. He was taken to the Toke Trooper Post, where officers again offered to release him, and he again refused. Troopers then transported him to the Fairbanks Correctional Center. An FCC booking officer staffer said that Sharkey was still being held, but was scheduled to be released on his own recognizance, assuming he'll leave.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. High-priced orders are coming in fast for Copper River salmon. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Alaska's 2021 salmon season officially starts next Monday on May 17th with a 12-hour opener for Reds and Kings at the Copper River. All eyes will be on early Cordova dock prices as Alaska's famous first fresh salmon of the season hits upscale wild salmon markets. In 2020, COVID forced closures of high-end restaurants and seafood outlets and tanked Copper River starting prices to $3 a pound for Reds and $6.50 for Kings, down from $10 and $14 a pound respectively the previous year. But early signs are looking good. The Retail Federation reported a lot more consumer optimism this year as more people are getting vaccinated and stimulus checks are being distributed and friends and family are moving about more freely. Meanwhile, the Cordova Times reports that orders already are coming in fast for Copper River fish. Phones were said to be ringing off the hook at Pike's Place Fish Market in Seattle, where pre-orders for fresh Copper River sockeye fillets are at $49.99 a pound and $79.99 for Copper River Kings. Senesee Seafoods in Washington, the sales arm of Cordova-based 60 Degrees North Seafoods, has pre-orders for fresh king fillets at $139 a pound and $122 for sockeyes. Copper River Seafoods is taking orders for sockeye fillets at $49.95 a pound and king salmon fillets at $69.95. Anchorage-based online seafood marketer FishX is promoting orders at $44.95 a pound for sockeyes and $78.95 for Copper River Kings. State managers forecast low Copper River total catches this year at 652,000 sockeyes and 13,000 king salmon. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 11th day of May, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:54 a.m. and will set again at 10:20. That will give us 16 hours and 26 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 17 seconds compared to yesterday. The record low for this date was 29. That was set in 98 in 2001. And the record high was 72, set in 1968. We are not going to reach that. 44 degrees right now. Scattered showers, cloudy. High near 46, they're still saying. West wind to 5 miles per hour should become completely calm and stay that way overnight. Scattered showers overnight with a low around 38. For tomorrow, just isolated showers before 2 p.m., slight chance of rain after 2, cloudy skies tomorrow, high near 46. And for Thursday, 30% chance of rain after 11 a.m., partly sunny skies on Thursday, again with a high near 46. So pretty nice weather compared to what we've had. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 3:09 p.m. That will be a 7-foot tide. The next low tide will be 8:32 p.m. and be 1.8 feet. Our high tide for the middle of the night on the east side will be at 2:39 a.m. and be 9 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 9:19 a.m. and be minus 0.8 feet. Over on the west side in these Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 3:29 p.m., about 3:30. That will be a 13.8-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:18 p.m. of 1.8 feet. Your next high tide will be at 3:11 a.m. and be 15 feet. And your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 9:46 a.m. and be minus 1.7 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 1,008 millibar low, 50 nautical miles southeast of Middleton Island, will weaken and move inland Tuesday afternoon. A 1,015 millibar low, 210 nautical miles south of Kodiak, will move Wednesday morning to 240 nautical miles south of Middleton Island and go Wednesday night to 1,018 millibars. As a result, our local weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, variable 10 right now, seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof, northeast wind 15 knots right now, becoming southwest 15 this afternoon, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, southwest winds to 15 knots, becoming northeast 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 4 feet. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays. Chiniac Bay, variable 10 right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, variable less than 10, seas to 3 feet. Marmot Bay, variable less than 10 right now, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, variable wind less than 10, becoming east 10 tomorrow afternoon, seas remaining at 3 feet in Marmot Bay. Looking at local meetings for the Kodiak Island Borough, there's quite a bit happening tomorrow. Local Emergency Planning Committee is having their quarterly meeting. That's happening at 1:30 p.m. at the emergency or the Assembly Chambers. Also tomorrow, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. On Thursday, the Borough Assembly is having their work session. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in Bayside Fire Hall. And next Monday, the Consolidation Committee will be having a meeting, 6:30 p.m. in the conference room. Tonight, the Kodiak City Council will be having a work session. That's happening at the Library Multipurpose Room at 7:30. It's open to the public, and for more information or to get the link to join them, just go to the City of Kodiak website. Kodiak Teen Court is recruiting new members. Sign up for at your school office or call Kodiak Teen Court office at 486-3550 and leave a message to enroll in this year's classes, which begin, they already began. AMSI and Alaska Sea Grant are conducting a fishing drill conductor class in Kodiak coming up next Thursday, May 27th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and May 28th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Actually, I guess that's 2 weeks from this Thursday. The cost for the class is $125 for commercial fishermen and $175 for all others. This class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels, and pretty soon everyone's going to have someone with that card. You can register online at www.amsea.org, that's AMSEA.org, or you can call them up at 907-747-3287. The Kodiak Arts Council and the Frame Shop are inviting Kodiak artists to submit new original creative work to be included in the 21st annual Crab Festival Art Show. The show will accept and feature artwork by Kodiak residents completed within the past 3 years. Eligible media include just about everything. The art show will be staged in person downtown at Fisherman's Hall, right next to all the fun of the festival. The deadline to register as a participating artist is May 21st, and you can find complete guidelines and a link to the online submission form at kodiakarts.org. That's all one word, kodiakarts.org, or theframeshopak.com.
Arctic Care 2021 is coming to Kodiak May 5th through May 13th. Arctic Care 2021 is a no-cost healthcare services program provided by the U.S. Department of Defense in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association. Arctic Care offers no-cost dental, medical, and optometry services to anyone in the Kodiak community. To learn more, including how to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 486-9870.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 1220. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.